What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Summer Movies Podcast. My name is Eric Davis. I'm the managing editor at Movies.com, and I am stoked to have guests today joining us to talk about Godzilla. This is our big Godzilla podcast. We're going to talk about Godzilla. We have Sean O'Connell, who's a frequent member of this podcast. He is the movies content director over at cinemablend.com. Hello, Sean.
Hey, Eric. Good to be with you.
And then we have Evan Sathoff, who is the news editor of Badass Digest. He is at Sam Strange on Twitter, if you know him there. He also writes for movies.com and Fandango. What's up, Evan?
Hey. Happy to be here.
I specifically wanted Evan for this podcast because he is the biggest Godzilla fan that I know. I remember when we did a little countdown to Pacific Rim last year, and Evan wrote a series of pieces that were really good that just kind of talked about the kaiju and all the different Godzilla movies. And he's did a couple of Godzilla pieces, and nobody knows more than about Godzilla than this man. So I'm excited. I'm excited to have him talk about this movie with us, and I know he liked it. So
yeah.
So we're going to talk about
that. No pressure. Nobody knows as much about Godzilla.
Yeah, I got to dispute that a little bit.
you are the world renowned expert on Godzilla. But before we start talking about that, let me just tell you, this is a Summer Movies podcast. It's a podcast that's going to run from May through the end of August. We're going to be talking not only about summer movies that are coming out in 2014 this summer, but also summer movies that are coming out in the future years, 2015, 2016. We could probably even go out to like 2018 at this point. And also summer movies of old, some movies that we grew up with, and we're going to touch on some of that. So before we get to Godzilla, though, we do want to talk about a little bit of news that arrived earlier last week. Transformers 4, Transformers Age of Extinction, released a new trailer. And I'm curious to see what you guys think about this. We know we've gone through three Transformers movies. Now they're switching it up. We've got Mark Wahlberg in there. A new story, which I don't know. All these stories seem the same to me. Otherworldly force comes and Transformers, and they all fight each other. But I'll be honest with you. I watched this trailer, and I wasn't a big fan of the second and third Transformers movies. I watched this trailer, and I kind of dug it. I liked how that one Transformers face turned into a gun. I liked how they have the Dinobots in it. I liked how John Goodman's Transformer, the brief look that we had at him, looks awesome, and he looks crazy.
Is he the one with the beard?
I think he's the one with the chain beard. Looks like a giant like biker dude as a Transformer. And you know what? That's something that this franchise, I don't think it hasn't had up until this point. It's like these, like other than Bumblebee and Optimus Prime, you know, those distinguishing characteristics that where you could really kind of invest in a robot other than the main three robots. So, Evan, what did you think of the Transformers? I don't know. I don't even know if you're a fan of this franchise, but what did you think of the trailer? And are you excited for the fourth one?
Okay, well, I'm not a fan of the franchise at all. But I can tell you that every trailer for every Transformers movie has always blown me away. And I think this could be the one that's really good. And I've been, I don't want to say hurt, but I've been disappointed every time. So this one, I just can't get past that. You know, like, you fool me once, shame. I've been fooled three times. It's time to not fall for it anymore on my camp. But like the stuff that you're talking about, like the goofy beard guy. I mean, that's cool. Dinobots are cool, but I just can tell that it's not going to be cool enough that it's going to make the movie as good as I would want it to be, or as interesting as I would require for me to like change my mind about this series. From what I can see, it's not changed up enough. You know, the addition of Mark Wahlberg and slight aesthetic changes. I still can't really understand what these robots look like. They don't seem to have been severe enough for me to get excited. It really does look like the same old, pretty much the same old stuff. And like you said, there's some kind of invading force. I can't even, that looks exactly like 2 and 3. And when I think about 2 and 3, I can't even remember. I can't keep straight who the bad guys were or what the conflict was, except I know part 3 had the Chicago invasion thing, but I don't remember the Fallen versus, I don't even know. What was the guy in part 3, the Dark of the Moon guy?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's too confusing.
It is. It is a little confusing unless you're like a super crazy Transformers nerd and you know all these robots inside and out. I played with the toys when I was a kid. I was a Transformers fan, but I, you know, my memory goes. I only remember like six or seven of them by name. Sean,
I don't even know if Michael Bay knows the names of them. I think he just calls them like the green one and the red one. Have the red one punch the green one again.
Sean, are you in Evan's camp? Are you like, you know, I've been let down by this franchise and it's hard for me to get excited for a fourth one?
I was never let up by the franchise. I've never been a fan of what they're doing, and I'm just indifferent to the extension of it. I don't disbelieve in the idea of Transformers movies, but I think they need a change at director, and I'd love to see someone else take the reins. And I have nothing against Bay. I really don't. But exactly what you guys are saying, the action sequences, the big, noisy, loud, cluttered action sequences are so nondistinct. I can't tell you. You could show me an action clip from a Transformers movie and I would never, with a gun to my head, be able to tell you which one it's from. And this one does just look like more of the same. I know we're getting new characters and it's supposed to be a different timeline. But unless it had a fresh director and a new voice, I just think it's going to end up – like Bay is just going to slowly get right back to the comfortable pocket that he has where it's just carnage going on screen, and he's going to try and keep upping the game. And I don't think that franchise needs to get bigger and bigger. I think probably needed to get smaller and a little bit more intimate and go in a different direction. So
yeah, so it's like you can keep changing the actors, but if you don't change the aesthetic of it,
right,
then it's still going to feel the same. I mean, even if the first three films sort of felt the same, they're still making crazy money, so people are enjoying them. Mm-hmm. On some level, and I personally would love to see Michael Bay, you know, move on, let's do something else. You know, I feel like Transformers 4 allowed him to make Pain and Gain, which was really cool. I love that movie.
It's worth it.
Yeah, and I'd like to see him do something else, but I don't know. I'm remaining casually optimistic about Transformers 4. I dug the trailer. I like the fact that John Goodman's in it. I think they're moving in the right direction by getting some really great character actors to voice some of these robots and breathe some life into them, give us something more to invest in. So we'll have to see. We'll have to see what happens. Transformers 4 comes out. When does it come out? The end of June? June 27th? Around
June 27th. I guess it's technically the July 4th movie. So.
Yeah. I think we have like a heart. We have Deliverance from Evil, too, coming out. July 3rd, maybe, or right around that. We have a horror movie coming out over the July 4th weekend. I don't even remember the last time that happened. The Conjuring wasn't. Conjuring was like late July, I believe, right?
Counter-programming. Counter-programming to the loud blockbusters. Maybe they have the goods with – was it Deliverance from Evil? Is that what it's called?
Yeah. You know, I'm curious. Scott Derrickson's a good director. I'm curious to see what he does there. But it's interesting just to see them putting a horror movie over the July 4th weekend. I feel like horror movies are getting more – like these bigger primer slots. I feel like they kind of took over all of April. There were a bunch of horror movies in April. I'm curious. I'm curious to see if it makes a lot of money, because that's a conversation that we're gonna have. And can horror movies become big summer movies too?
I have to assume it. Yeah. All these horror films in they have lower budgets in common, you know. So like they don't have to make a ton. They don't have to make Transformers money to be like a huge success. So maybe there's more opportunity with counter programming with them.
Yeah,
in summer slots like that. That's deep in the summer, though. Maybe they're pulling a little risky move, I guess.
Yeah, well, I felt like what Conjuring came out in like late July, right? I think.
Yeah,
I think they did like a late July slot for Conjuring, and it did bonkers business. So maybe that was them saying, okay, maybe we could back up and let's throw a horror movie on 4th of July weekend. What the hell? Let's see what happens.
Was Purge like late May?
Yeah, Purge was like close to, I think it was maybe the weekend after Memorial Day weekend. I don't think it was Memorial Day weekend, but yeah, that was late May. So they're casually dropping these horror movies, and they're not huge, giant, you know, horror movies attached to massive franchises either. The Purge, Deliver Us from Evil, you know, these are kind of smaller horror movies, and they're casually dropping them on giant weekends over the summer. So I think that's interesting.
Really,
I think we're going to have to keep an eye on Deliver Us from Evil to see what happens later on. But let's segue over to Godzilla. That's why we have Evan here, because he is the universe's – what is your title? Universe's most well-known expert on – Godzilla Attacks.
Congratulations.
Oh, my God.
That's awesome.
I think, Evan, let me just, I got to read through your stats. He got his PhD in, kaiju warfare from,
No, it was kaiju psychology.
Kaiju psychology, when he was over in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
He has a master's in Godzilla. I can't even pronounce it, but it's something to do with Godzilla's, sort of anatomy. He has a master's. He just got out of school. He was in school for 13 years studying Godzilla.
13, yeah. Unlucky number, unless you're studying Godzilla.
Yes. And he is currently he's working part-time in a lab trying to figure out a way to create a real Godzilla.
Yeah, and I wrote the new movie.
Yeah, and he wrote the new movie, and he is contractually obligated to write the next 7 sequels.
That's
so
right.
There's a lot going on with Evan. When it comes to Godzilla. So let's start with you, Evan. You are the Godzilla nut. What did you think of the movie?
I loved it. I loved it for a lot of reasons. But the number one reason that I loved it is that instead of being kind of an arrogant, we're going to Americanize Godzilla. And I don't even mean just visually. I mean as far as storytelling and just like shot aesthetic. They decided that they really made something that was in the Godzilla tradition of the Japanese films, especially the last couple like eras, the Heisei era and the Millennium era. This Godzilla looked like a man in suit Godzilla, even though it wasn't that, you know, it wasn't created with a man in a rubber suit, but the way he moved, the way that the kaiju wrestling looked had that kind of stiffness and awkwardness and just really jumping in with, this is kind of a silly thing, but this is what happens in Godzilla movies. And even though we're doing them with the big budget and American stars and just it's a tentpole film, we're going to stick with the way these films kind of look as far as silly wrestling moves and stuff like that. They kept all that. And I was shocked because I was expecting something, really dour because that was the ad campaign. Really serious, but it wasn't. It was fun, like a Spielberg film. And
it is sort of a dour film, though. I mean, there is no comic relief. There's no Hank Azaria.
It starts out definitely kind of dour, but I thought it was going to be like a disaster film where the human toll was the focus and we were going to be sad like all the time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it was going to be, I mean, and that's in keeping with the first Godzilla. I thought maybe he was going to try to like reclaim that terror and that kind of awe, not awe like, wow, he's so big and cool, but awe like he's so destructive. But that wasn't the tone they were going for. That's all I mean. It was more like fun than that. Because it is about a Godzilla who's the Earth's protector, which isn't according to the original, but like almost every other Godzilla movie, he shows up to save us in quite a few of them. And I honestly think he's like cooler as a hero, because it's extremely hard to make him effective as a villain. You know, they've only really pulled it off in the original, and Giant Monsters All Out Attack does a pretty good job of it also, but. You know, I want to see Godzilla wrestle. Like, we found out, I guess, around Comic-Con that there were even going to be other kaiju. That was a surprise. Like, I didn't know. And then it became more and more clear that it was going to be Godzilla fighting monsters and not about buildings falling down and stuff like that. And I love it for that. The best is, like, when he's fighting the flying Muto. That's what they're called, right?
Yeah.
It looked like Rodan, kind of. I mean, like, it looked like it was on strings a little bit. And just the fact that Godzilla would, like, bite its tail and swing it around into a... I've seen him do that move in other movies, and I did not expect that level of pulp to be present in this film, and I'm so glad that it was embraced so thoroughly. And I loved it for that. And all the people, all the human characters that aren't as exciting as they could be, I can have some problems with that. But I can also move on because just like every other Godzilla film, you don't come for that stuff. You seem to always kind of, it's very rare there's a Godzilla movie where you don't want to fast forward through those things a little. and this is in keeping with that. That's not to say it wouldn't be better if every little thing about it was perfect, but like, I'm not, not, I guess I'm just not thinking of it like it has to perform like a perfect movie. I'm just excited what a great Godzilla film it is. So that's my piece.
Sean, what's your piece?
I don't bring an interest in Godzilla that the fans of the franchise are bringing to it. And so there are probably a lot of things in there that Evan's talking about that work well, you know, for people who love the franchise and wanted to see more of it. All I can really do is judge it of how it worked for me as a standalone film, because it felt like they were trying to serve a lot of masters in terms of there's Godzilla mythology that we have to get to, and we're going to give a lot of exposition to characters like Ken Watanabe to keep all of this moving along. But I never felt that the movie found its tone, because I was always trying to figure out what it was trying to be. Was it uberly serious, where we have to be treating it like a military versus monsters type film? Was it goofy and campy? Because there were scenes that struck me as they were funny to me, but I never knew if they were supposed to be funny. Like I was describing to one person the scene that bothered me because it just didn't play the right way of Elizabeth Olsen's character, who I don't think she gets much to do at all in this movie. You know, telling the son to go to bed. And he's watching the news, and there's this huge fight in Hawaii going on. And the more she kept telling him to turn the TV off and not realizing the thing, and I was like, that scene didn't play well for me. And people who liked it are like, oh, well, that's a joke. Like, that was humor. And I was like, it just didn't strike me that way. So I had a really hard time just figuring out what the tone of the film was, because I thought it got off to a really good start. I liked the Bryan Cranston stuff, and I thought he was going to be the motivator for our battle against Godzilla, or what we need Godzilla to do for us. And when he exits the film and it has to rest on the shoulders of Aaron Taylor Johnson, who to me is not an engaging leading man on any level, I felt like there was a whole hour in the middle that was just a lot of treading water, waiting for this, you know, final battle sequence that when it comes, it's really exciting and it's the payoff. I felt like we had to really spin a lot of wheels to get to the payoff. And I can't say that I always followed what was going on or even really invested in what was going on.
Yeah, you know, I felt like at times it was a movie that was fighting itself, because you have these humans. You could have that slow reveal of the monster. People, you know, they talk about Jaws when they're talking about this movie and how there's this kind of build up to it. And I really like that about this film. I don't need the money shots, bang, 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 bang. I like how they kind of savor Godzilla and they savor these monsters and they show you little pieces of them building up to that big fight. And that's great. That's a really great aspect of this movie. But then at the same time, if you're going to do that, then you need to color in your characters, your human characters, a little bit more. So this way, yeah, when we have those periods, those stretches of no monsters where we're with our human characters, then they need to give us something to invest in. So they can carry us, our attention, over to the big finale that we're waiting for. So I just felt like if they would have colored in their characters a little bit more, it could have been more successful. And yeah, if we would have been with Cranston, maybe if he would have survived and been with us the whole time.
Let's talk about killing him off and that decision.
I was disappointed that they did that.
Okay, so everybody.
As someone who liked the movie, did you think that was a smart decision?
Well, I don't know about if it was a smart decision or not. Because I'm more... Everything you guys said is totally accurate, right? Like, I agree with you. But I'm thinking if Bryan Cranston lived, then what would have to be reorganized? Because one thing what's the guy's name? Aaron Taylor Johnson, is that his name?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, he's not good in the film. He's just sort of a bland guy, and putting the film on his shoulders wasn't a good idea. And I guess if it were more about him and Bryan Cranston, I don't know, both getting back to America, or see, because Ken Watanabe is. I'm awful with these names. He sort of takes that role, right? He becomes the motivator. He becomes the person who's smart enough to see, and the person who's saying the things the audience wants to hear.
Yeah, like, kind of the things that Bryan Cranston would have figured out throughout the movie. If you kept him around, he would have sort of been that character, kind of guiding everybody telling, you know, he would have been that random guy, like in like the highest office of the U.S. government, you know, and you'd be like, how did you get kind of like Independence Day? Remember like Jeff Goldblum's like standing next to the president? You're like, how did this happen? You know, exactly. And there's a lot of moments with Aaron Taylor Johnson where he just kind of fumbles himself along this journey. But then you look at a movie like Independence Day, and because it has sort of a similar structure where these kind of characters are going, go, you know, kind of following this adventure. Mm-hmm. Will Smith is so much more charismatic than Aaron Taylor Johnson. And, right. And
And someone brought this up too, and when they were trying to, someone who really likes Godzilla also, when I tried to say they forced Aaron Taylor Johnson into every action sequence to the point where, like, when he was finally a member of the paratroopers, also, I was like, this guy does everything, which is ridiculous. And my friend who loved the movie, he was like, but what about Will Smith in Independence Day? And I said, but Independence Day didn't put Will Smith everywhere. Like, if Will Smith was in Los Angeles when those buildings blew up, and then he was also in Washington, D.C. when the White House blew up, and then if he was also in outer space when they had to go up to the ships, he wasn't in each of those. They developed the different characters that carried each different leg of that movie. And I'm not saying that that's what made that movie better. But what hurt Godzilla, I think, was the bad writing that forced Aaron Taylor Johnson into – he comes home to his wife. He's there for 5 minutes. He gets a phone call, and it's like, back to Japan. And I understood why they wanted him to go back to Japan, but I was like, you could have another character carry another plot thread to make us care about someone else, because you just keep forcing Aaron Taylor Johnson on us. That by the end of the movie, when he's the only soldier who's able to pilot this boat out into the middle of the water because it has a bomb on it, maybe I just would have been a little bit more invested in that storyline if just another soldier or some other character had been more relevant. It was like always Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Evan, what's the with previous Godzilla movies? You know, you say that they don't spend a lot of time on the human characters, but do you,
no, they spend too much time on
them. They spend too much time on them. But is it like this movie where we are sort of following one central character, or do they bounce around like Sean was saying this movie needed and sort of try to get you invested in several different people?
No, it's like a group. It's a lot like this one. There's a group. It tends to be like a scientist and his assistant, and maybe like sometimes there's a kid or something also. And they have theories about how to destroy Godzilla or theories about how to destroy the monster Godzilla's fighting. They usually have some kind of like role, and they're trying to convince people. Then there's also the military, and the military, they would interact with the military, or the main characters would just be part of the military, especially in the later ones that focus on like weapons to fight Godzilla with, later Mecha Godzilla ones in particular. There's like a group of cadets, maybe, that sort of thing. And it's, you know, it is a part of this this subgenre that characters show up in unlikely places, so the same character that carries the movie can be present for a lot of this stuff, you know. Cloverfield's another good example where the characters that we're following just happen to be around all kinds of madness that isn't, you know, all that realistic. And it's like it's kind of like I was saying before, as a tentpole film that comes out and say there's no other Godzilla movies, and you have to rate this as just a regular movie. I mean, it has a lot of problems. All these things are problems. But, you know, for me, I didn't care. Like, I am really in it kind of in just like a whole different way. I'm in it to see kaiju stuff. Yeah. And, like, Aaron Taylor Johnson, when the first kaiju wakes up and there's that shot where he's, like, just standing there and he's really small and this other thing rises and it's so big, that, to me, like, is worth 5 or 10 minutes of kind of boring stuff. And because that's what I came for. And, like, there's also that shot where Godzilla's laying down and Aaron Taylor Johnson, like, looks at him a little bit. You almost feel like he's going to walk up to him and like pat him on the nose, which I really wish he had. But like, you know, that's what it is for me. That's like what I came for. And I don't care about realism. And I do wish that he had been more charismatic, but like, it's not something that I feel like is a detriment to me. I think I'm just immune to judging it in that way.
Well, you're more invested in the monsters than you are the humans.
Yeah, and they really made Godzilla like a kind of compelling character. Like, he's silent, of course. Like, you don't see him that much, but they give him a lot of, like, interesting characteristics. You see him, he kind of, like, after he kills one of the monsters, he sort of, like, sighs, like he's tired. He's sort of gentle with the human stuff, the way he goes underneath those ships and things like that. I mean, like, maybe my favorite shot in the movie is him just swimming, like, flanked by aircraft carriers.
Yeah, and that was a cool shot.
To me, that just, like, raises me up so high that
I want you know what I wanted in that scene? I wanted to hear the remember that scene in Ghostbusters when, like, they get him out of prison and they like start heading down and they're flanked by, like, all these cops.
Yeah.
I wanted that song to kick in.
I'll tell you one thing. You know, I've seen like 30 of these films and they're all these military people just shooting and shooting and shooting and shooting at Godzilla. And I think that stuff's pretty boring. This is the first one where, like, they shoot at him for about 5 seconds. Then they look at each other like, that's not doing any good. And they stop. I was like, oh, my gosh, I've always wanted to see that. And so that, you know, there's tons of little things like that that give me pleasure. And the first half, it's, like, really light on Godzilla. But I don't agree that it's light on monster stuff. I think that he cuts to the first, just the one kaiju, and then the second kaiju, like, with enough regularity, and you get to see them enough. And they are kind of interesting, because one's real big and the other one is smaller but can fly.
I'd argue this should be called Muto the Movie, actually, because you get so more of them than Godzilla.
You do.
Well, it's true, but, like, at least it's not like you wait for the reveal of the whole film. He's giving you stuff, and it's pretty exciting. While he's sort of parsing out Godzilla in a more careful fashion.
I agree with you. And if the human characters were written a little bit more deeply, with a little bit more depth, then I'm caring a lot more about those moments where I'm not getting as much Godzilla as I want than I would have.
I want to bring up something because I'm listening to Evan, and Evan sounds like me about Spider-Man. And I think this brings up a really interesting topic that we're going to keep running across all summer, where we get to these franchises that are clearly made with certain audiences in mind, and it's really interesting that they work for one group that's really anticipating it and just want to see certain things versus the more mainstream audience that judges a movie from a different way. Because we're going to run into this with X-Men too. Like, X-Men's going to work really well for the X-Men audience, but I wouldn't be surprised if some people who haven't seen an X-Men movie in 10 years show up and they're like, this is way too convoluted and there's time travel and why are there two Charles Xaviers? But we've reached the point where certain directors have to make these films and they're really targeting a very specific audience that knows their stuff. And I think it's hard to find that balance between, because to me, Spider-Man was so great and it served the Spider-Man audience. But all I keep hearing is from other people who are like, oh, it didn't work for this very reason. I find that really fascinating.
Yeah, I do find it fascinating. But part of me would rather them just go one way, or at least go a majority of it one way, instead of trying to make these movies that are supposed to please everyone and just look weird because they're trying to please everyone.
Right.
And I would rather them sort of, you know, make a movie for fans, majority, you know, than to kind of make this
Well, then something will come along, and I mean, maybe it'll be like Hercules or, you know, something that's just so mainstream and hits all the right buttons, and we're going to be like, oh, that's the movie, you know. Even Transformers, which we were talking about earlier, I don't know if that's going to be the movie. I think it's going to go right to the Transformers audience. Michael Bay is going to keep serving his audience. Yeah. So it might be something completely out of left field.
Maybe it'll be Guardians of the Galaxy.
I hope it's Guardians of the Galaxy.
I hope so,
too. It will be Maleficent.
But quickly, I do like to talk about older summer movies as well. So we do need to get some of that into this episode. And, you know, Godzilla is a disaster movie in a lot of ways. There's a lot of disaster. I'm glad that there's no disaster in New York City this time. Although I did find it interesting. I was watching a trailer for it on TV, a TV spot, and I saw the Statue of Liberty's head at one point. I was like, wait. And I'm talking to my wife, and I'm like, wait, I got to rewind that. I was like, because New York's not in this movie. And I rewound it, and I paused it on the Statue of Liberty's head that was all disheveled, and I see mountains in the distance, and I realized, oh, it's New York, New York. It's the hotel in Vegas that they're – so, but it's interesting that they do that. It's almost like they flashed that Statue of Liberty head fast in a commercial to make you think that – maybe this destruction is more widespread than it is. But really, it's New York and Vegas. I thought that was a funny part of the movie. But let's look at
San Francisco and Vegas, right?
It's I think San Francisco and Vegas, and that was another part of humor that I was laughing at, but it got some nervous chuckles when they come through the casino and all these people are like playing their slot machines and it's just destruction, like just crumbling all around them, but they're still staying there playing their slot machines. Yeah. I thought that was a pretty funny moment, but yeah, the summer movie season is full of disaster movies. So I've asked Sean and Evan to let us know what their favorite summer disaster movie is. Sean?
Oh, I get to go first? I'm going with Twister.
Twister? Really? The Twister?
Twister is such a bad movie.
The Tornado movie.
But it's so fun. It's so over-the-top corny and cheesy on every level. It has one of my favorite Philip Seymour Hoffman performances as Dusty. Screaming about Bill Paxton as the Pullman Paxton?
Paxton Paxton
as the extreme. It has Helen Hunt in her prime, Jamie Gertz in her prime, and it's one of those perfectly structured summer movies where they lay it out in the very beginning that we have an escalating series of category 2 through 5 tornadoes. And you just know that as the movie progresses, we're going to get to the Category 5 at the end. Finger of God, right? And Jan de Bont knows how to pace an action movie like that. I mean, obviously Speed was a great film too. And it had all of the characteristics of the cheesy summer movie. It had a Van Halen soundtrack. Just iPod – like there was a great Spielberg-esque – again, we throw that term out there – scene at the drive-in movie theater – where the storm is coming on very suddenly. Like, none of it makes any sense, but you just go along for the ride. And it's funny that, like, these natural disasters, now the tone is so different now. Like, you tried to make it, well, I guess they're going to do Into the Storm. We'll see how people react to it. But it seems like we used to celebrate these natural disasters in these big disaster movies more than nowadays, where it feels like we're like, oh, that's too real. We shouldn't use this stuff for entertainment. But back in the 90s, boy, we used every volcanoes, asteroids, earthquakes. We'd used everything for entertainment.
Yeah, yeah. And it is, I guess, hitting a little close to home. I'm curious to see how Into the Storm plays this summer.
It looks great. It looks great.
It looks really cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Evan, what's your favorite summer disaster movie?
Godzilla 98.
Godzilla.
No, I'm just kidding. Just a joke. I was gonna say Armageddon because I like Armageddon and almost the exact same, all the stuff that Sean just said about Twister, and I really like Twister too. But I'm gonna go with Independence Day. I think that Independence Day was my favorite because I can remember so clearly the anticipation building up to it. I think the trailer came out at the Super Bowl that year.
It did,
and you didn't know what it was. You know, that trailer didn't have stars in it. It was just destruction in a way that seemed really, really enticing, and I was so curious about it. And then the movie came out, and it really, you know, to my young self anyway, totally delivered. It was so exciting. And I've seen it just a gazillion times since then. And so I'm definitely going with that. And you're right. You know, like, it has those cool characters in a way that Godzilla totally doesn't even come close. Jeff Goldblum, for sure. But, like, I also really love Judd Hirsch in that movie.
Judd
I love everybody
great
in that movie.
My David.
Yeah. it's not the most sensitive, but,
no,
you know,
no.
Neither am I sometimes. So I don't care. But I had a blast at that movie, and I think that it really, when I think about summer movies that are, even if just out, doesn't have to be a disaster movie, but like that, the season and getting geared up for one, that was kind of a perfect one for my age, I guess. And I remember it really fondly in that way. So I'm going with Independence Day.
Yeah, I agree completely with you. Independence Day was actually my choice too. So thank you, Evan. and it's hard. It's hard for me not to go with Independence Day because it had such an impact on me. I was right at that age too, where my friends and I were lining up opening night. We sat in the fourth row, screaming the whole time. It was the most exhilarating experience as a kid to watch that movie. You know, this is when special effects were really starting to kind of take off in ways that we hadn't seen yet. And so, yeah, it was. I just dug so much of it. I mean, I still to this day I still give it crap for defeating an alien race with a computer virus. But, you know, back then, those kinds of things made sense, I guess. And, you know, and it was fun. It was fun to see Will Smith when he was young and hungry and mm-hmm. wanting to do really cool movies like that and, you know, turned him into a superstar. You know, it shows that, you know, people give Roland Emmerich some crap. But you know what? He makes some pretty good movies.
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes.
What was the last one he made? I remember I really liked it.
White House Down. I dug White House Down.
And it was sort of different for him, but it was pretty fun. It was no Olympus Has Fallen, though, because there were no head stabbings in it.
Well, he kept going back to the well. Like, he did The Day After Tomorrow, and he did 2012. Mm-hmm. And he was definitely trying to recapture that lightning in a bottle.
He's trying to recapture Independence Day. You know, and here's my question, and we'll probably leave shortly after this, but, you know, obviously, we like disaster movies. We get them all the time. We like disaster in movies. But what do these movies need to do? How do these movies need to evolve in order to keep our interest? Or are we interested no matter what? I mean, they could just keep destroying cities. I mean, we're so immune to citywide destruction these days that, I mean, what do these kinds of movies, these sorts of disaster movies need to do in order to evolve, in order to give us something new?
Well, they're doing the universe building. That's probably going to be where it goes.
Building the universe?
Yeah. Building, you know, Marvel, what they want to do with Spider-Man, what they want to do with X-Men, that sort of stuff, I think, is going to become more prevalent.
So you're saying that we're not going to get disaster films, per
well,
se,
a lot
anymore.
Of those films
we're going to just get disaster in movies that have larger universes.
Yeah.
Et cetera. So we're like the days of getting an Independence Day to a certain degree, but the days of getting a Twister. But we have it. You know, the storm's coming this summer. So I mean, Sean, what do you feel like? Do you want to see like a straight up disaster movie? And if so, what needs to happen? How do these event disaster movies need to evolve?
I need a hero. I need a charismatic, sarcastic. Not always sarcastic, but I would prefer that hero that I can invest in. One or two or three, you know, up the ante. You can show me amazing special effects, but I want to see them affecting characters in a story that I want to invest in, because we've seen special effects be able to do just about anything. It has to be character driven as far as I'm concerned. It has to be some type of hero or anti-hero who I want to sort of admire and root for to survive these different effects, because the emphasis right now is on the destruction and not necessarily on who the destruction is affecting. And I think we need to refocus ourselves that way.
What disaster haven't we seen, or haven't we seen in a long enough time that you want to see on the screen again? Is it meteors crashing into Earth, volcanoes? I mean, we've gotten a Sharknado, but what
Rock's going to do? San Andreas.
San Andreas. Yes. Well, so we are getting a San Andreas. So volcanoes are coming back in.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. Like, that could be. I have high hopes for that. That sounds really entertaining.
Evan,
yeah,
is there a particular disaster that you're just jonesing to see play out on the screen?
No.
No, you don't care. Obamacare.
We were watching Impossible the other night on cable, and it was a great tsunami effect. And it was tsunamis. For what it was fantastic. But you know, after that, you needed to settle in and be like, okay, now let's follow this family and see if they'll reunite. And that movie to me worked for those reasons. Mm-hmm. I think you can have the effect. You can do anything with effects now, but you have to have characters that people care about.
Yeah. We haven't. I feel like earthquake. We haven't had an earthquake.
That's what San Andreas is, right?
Isn't it? Is it earthquake, volcano? I don't even know. San Andreas fault. Yeah. So I guess it's earthquake.
Yeah.
But I still like
earthquake with a twist of volcano, maybe.
Maybe just an earthquake though isn't going to be all that exciting. You know, you need other stuff to do with the earthquake and a good hero, like you said. It's true.
Yeah, I hear you.
But it's The Rock. I mean, it'll be a, he's, that's as heroic as they get.
Just make Godzilla the hero of every movie.
Darn right. That's all I take.
Guys, thank you so much for joining us on the Summer Movies Podcast. It was really great to have you. Evan Sadhoff is news editor for Badass Digest, also writes for Movies.com and Fandango. And Sean O'Connell is the movies content director over at CinemaBlend.com. Go to all those sites and visit them and love them and cherish them and keep them in your hearts. Always. Thank you, guys.
Pleasure.
And enjoy your weekend at the movies.